had an interruption in the broadcast. Welcome all. Welcome one and welcome all. We had a technical difficulty happening. I guess you could call it a technical difficulty. Right, we're back on track. That's good. Running smooth. 98%. Doesn't get much better than this.
If you're leaving, close the door. I'm not expecting people anymore. Hear me grieving, lying on the floor. Whether I'm drunk or dead, I really ain't too sure. I'm a blind man. I'm a blind man. My world is pale. When a blind man cries, Lord, you know there ain't a sadder tale.
Special edition of Strange Days. Another magnificent turnout, and we'll see where we go from hence to forth.
Look. For the benefit of Mr. Kite, there will be a show tonight on trampoline. Is there, what a scene. Over men and horses, hoops and garters, lastly through a hogshead of real fire. In this way, Mr. K will challenge the world. The celebrated Mr. K performs his feat on Saturday at Bishop's Gate.
Nice neck of the woods.
The Hendersons will dance and sing as Mr. Kite flies through the ring. Don't be late. Let us K and H assure the public their production will be second to none. And of course, Henry the Horse dances the waltz. sound.
10-6.
And Mr. H will demonstrate 10 somersets he'll undertake on solid ground. Ding ding, some days in preparation, a splendid time is guaranteed for all. And tonight, Mr. Kite is topping the bill.
So I'm going to do one more bit of my little theatrics, and then I'm going to go into my little Pandora's box of tricks and see what I've saved this 24 hours on my little book, the file, Loom and Gloom, and all sorts of things in between. Okay, well, we've had a pretty gnarly day down here in southern Australia. We have now entered the 26th day of December. 26, eh? Nearly 2024. What a trip. What a trip. All right, let's go into this little folder of Loom and Gloom and see what I've got lined up here. It's going to be something I can bloody put together amongst many things. Too long.
Hello.
The good news is that our eyes are open.
Too long.
And we know what.
Too long.
Some animals, such...
Too long, too short.
So a lot of people ask me, say, hey, I feel overwhelmed, and I'm just tired of everything, and I just want to end. Well, I'd just like to point out that once you finally just give up on everything, you're in the perfect position to just relax and start making some better choices. Because once you realize that nothing really all that matters and you're willing to give it everything up, then you realize that nothing you're really holding on to is all that important. And then you start thinking about the things that really are important. Then you realize all the stuff that you were upset about isn't all that important. And then you can just start focusing on good stuff that is important and stuff. So what I'm trying to say is when you finally decide to give up, that's the best time to get on with it and start making some changes and be happy. So be happy.
I think that might be my long-lost brother somewhere around the world. I really do sometimes when I listen to him. You poor freaking weirdo, you're just like me. What a trip. Let's play it again now that we can understand his language.
So a lot of people ask me, say, hey, I feel overwhelmed, and I'm just tired of everything, and I just want to end. Well, I'd just like to point out that once you finally just give up on everything, you're in the perfect position to just relax and start making some better choices. Because once you realize that nothing really all that matters and you're willing to give it everything up, then you realize that nothing you're really holding on to is all that important. And then you start thinking about the things that really are important. Then you realize all the stuff that you were upset about isn't all that important. And then you can just start focusing on good stuff that is important and stuff. So what I'm trying to say is when you finally decide to give up, that's the best time to get on with it and start making some changes and be happy. So be happy.
He'd make a good religious leader for sure. He'd be doing some entrepreneur, and there's no doubt about it. A man with philosophy is a very, very wise man.
Okay, show me what you're doing.
No, I'm not going to show you nothing. I'm going through my list. Too long. Okay.
But it could be a long time. However,
all right.
He was optimistic.
This is
about
a bit lengthy. It's about 10 minutes. I won't go much into it, but I'm just going to play for about 4 or maybe 5 minutes. It's about China, launching an artificial sun, and a little bit of background into all those sort of things of fusion and all that.
China has made it. Quite a feat. China's artificial sun has broken a world record. It's been able to produce power by fusion for a full 7 minutes.
I think it was 17, actually. Not 7. So maybe right.
China has used nuclear technology to finally replicate the sun. It sounds unbelievable, but it is accurate. This breakthrough, nevertheless, makes one wonder if China can handle the fallout from such an accomplishment, and whether something may go wrong. Though they have long been a technical superpower, the Chinese have just demonstrated their prowess by sending their artificial sun into space. Join us as we explore this fascinating innovation, the Chinese sun, in more detail. Global race, at the sun's core lies an atomic inferno, a mass that creates extraordinary gravitational force with immeasurable pressure. The core of the sun resembles a pressure cooker that is filled with hydrogen isotopes that pair up to provide the Earth with light and heat. This light and heat are responsible for the survival of every species on this planet. With helium, there's a fascinating process that goes on within the core of the sun called fusion. And fusion is the holy grail of energy. Why is fusion so special? To begin with, there's no radioactive waste. There's no messy trail of nuclear leftovers to deal with. But there's another good reason. The fuel needed to make this process happen is easy to procure. All the scientists need is some heavy water and irradiated lithium. Fusion is an eco-friendly energy power source. There's minimal risk of greenhouse gases, and there are no environmental repercussions. This is the reason why scientists around the globe are eyeing fusion as the golden ticket to a clean energy future. More importantly, this energy revolution is a game changer. especially for nations that are heavily dependent on oil and gas exports. That is the reason a global race is going on, and China might have beaten the world to it. Governments and investors around the globe have thrown down their chips. The main contenders include big states like the United States, Russia, and China. But how exactly does nuclear fusion happen? Why is it better than the other nuclear processes? And is it less expensive than other sources of energy? A breakdown of nuclear fusion. Let's break down the process. First, it's important to understand how regular nuclear power plants work. These plants predominantly use fission, and this process is the opposite of fusion. In fission, to produce energy, you need to break atoms apart. In this atomic demolition, enriched uranium gets bombarded with neutrons, which sets off a nuclear chain reaction. It's an effective process, but it's much riskier than fusion. The Chernobyl saga still survives in the memories of the world. Now, fast forward to today. Nuclear fusion, or the creation of an artificial sun, aims to play it safe and produce next to no waste. That's a game changer. The world learned from the USSR's nuclear power plant, as it is known, that fission creates long-lasting radioactive waste. Fusion, on the other hand, is a futuristic energy source that works by combining two light nuclei into one heavy nucleus. This process requires high pressure and temperature similar to the Earth's core. To make this process possible, scientists require deuterium and tritium isotopes. These are the key elements that fuel this artificial sun. Deuterium is extracted from seawater, and tritium is obtained from lithium. Both are abundant and widely available compared to uranium. The most interesting part is that the deuterium in just 1 liter of seawater can produce as much energy as 300 liters of oil. That's a lot. To put it in a better perspective, a tiny amount of fusion fuel, just a few grams, can unleash 1 terajoule of energy. That's enough to cover one person's energy needs in a developed country for 6 years. This is the reason why each country is in the race to develop an artificial sun. But how specifically does China's artificial sun work? How does the sun work? After the scientists have gotten their tritium and deuterium fuel, the game plan is simple. But putting the theory into practice is tricky. For starters, scientists require an immense amount of pressure and heat, which can turn the fuel into scalding hot plasma. At this temperature, the atoms collide with a lot of kinetic energy. But how high of a temperature? Almost over 100 million degrees Celsius. Not to mention that the atoms also need to get hot enough for the nuclear attraction force to overcome the electrical repulsion. So, how is China doing this? To crank up the heat, China is using magnetic fields and laser means. These tools convert the fuel into hot plasma. This is just the start. Further in the process...
It's funny he mentioned that, because I keep thinking magnets for some reason. And I think a magnetic field around it, a bit like a bicycle sort of thing, where you've got magnets all facing in north, would help contain these sorts of energies as well, and maybe even produce them stronger to a denser field. But yeah, it's just really weird. I just had that on my mind, and he just said magnetic field. But just magnets alone, I don't know how they actually contain the energy and the heat with metals and stuff, but that's another issue. But yeah, there's something to do with magnets and free energy for sure. I've seen many devices made like that. I don't know why they just don't use that alone. And hydron sort of underground things, you'd have to do is touch it with a finger and spin it, and you got constant energy, you know, the way you situate the magnets towards each other. But this is the road that China's going down, and a few other places actually too.
More fuel is required to tame the heat so the artificial sun doesn't melt down. The problem arises here. There's no material that can handle scorching 100 million degrees Celsius. This is where plasma confinement comes in, and China has nailed down this technique. New world record. Recently, China's artificial sun just smashed a world record. In a feat that seemed impossible to achieve, China kept its nuclear fusion reaction going on for over 17 minutes.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, he said 17. I think that lady might have been wrong. I was pretty sure from a few sources that it was 17, but we'll continue.
The Experimental Advanced Superconducting Tokamak, a.k.a. Easton Heffy, Eastern China, created and sustained plasma for over 17 minutes, shattering its previous record of 101 seconds in 2017. This marked another important step toward creating high-efficiency, inexpensive thermonuclear fusion reactors. It's fascinating because developing this is similar to the Chinese having unlocked the secrets of the universe. Anthony Cuthbertson, an expert at Independent, explained in detail what happened at the power plant. Experts cranked up the heat in this latest experiment to a mind-blowing 126 million degrees Fahrenheit. For comparison, that's equivalent to five...
I think the actual thing, I don't know if he brings it up here, was around about, I think it was $22 billion dollars to create this thing. It's an amazing looking device and, well, yeah, structure, just like the Hadron Collider. Yeah, he might bring it up anyway.
Times hotter than the sun, and the sun is already scorching at 10,000 degrees Fahrenheit on the surface. What about the sun's core? That's a different story. The temperature is almost close to 27 million degrees Fahrenheit at its core. Gong Xianzu, an expert researcher from the Institute of Plasma Physics of the Chinese Academy of Sciences, was more than optimistic and excited about the experiment. He explained that this operation laid down a solid scientific and experimental foundation to move toward launching and running a fusion reactor. In simple terms, he meant that they were on the brink of something huge here. Was this...
Okay, what are we at? Six, I've gone over. I'll stuff it. I'll take it out. It's only got 5 minutes. It's worth a listen if you're interested in this sort of thing.
The first indication that China is about to launch its artificial sun? Maybe. The whole point of East is to provide energy for the entire world. According to the Xinhua News Agency, China highlighted big ambitions by stating that East is the potential clean energy goldmine for Earth. According to the Department of Energy, tokamaks, including the East, are at the forefront of the fusion game. This tool uses magnetic fields to wrangle and corral plasma, an electrified, high-temperature gas that, as we discussed, can cause meltdowns. Now, this plasma is brought to you in a loop course called a torus. This is a high-stakes racetrack for particles on a microscopic level. Inside the tokamak, lasers do their magic on heavy hydrogen atoms, deuterium and tritium, turning up the heat to hundreds of millions of degrees Fahrenheit. This is all done to replicate the gravitational pressure that takes place in the sun's core, and any star that's comparable to, or greater than, the sun. It doesn't sound easy, but China's East has aced the challenge. Keeping this plasma locked and loaded at insanely high temperatures without any leaks is impossibly difficult. Scientists have been chasing the dream of nuclear fusion energy for over 70 years. The struggle hasn't gotten any easier. This is one of the reasons why the world is shocked at China's artificial sun. It's a true show of power. Live Science reported that creating an experimental tokamak reactor that produces more energy than it sucks up hadn't happened yet. But that's where China's success with East came in. It provided the world with a glimmer of hope that we might be on the brink of revolutionary change in the way we produce energy. However, China's East isn't the only tokamak reactor in the game. It's the warm-up act for an even bigger tokamak reactor. It's the International Thermonuclear Experimental Reactor, or ITER for short. ITER is said to be the world's largest nuclear reactor, and there are multiple countries involved in this project. Almost 35 countries have been investing in ITER, according to Live Science. These countries include the United Kingdom, China, India, and every EU state. Currently, the world is treating China's East as a testing ground for the big show in France, where ITER is gearing up for action. Can ITER be launched without any potential bigger problems? A matter of scale, is China's fusion project the green energy superproject we've been waiting for? Or is it just another oversized white elephant? Some believe it's only a matter of when, not if. Song Yuntao, the deputy director of the Institute of Plasma Physics at the Hefei Institute of Physical Science, has expressed confidence in this project. According to him, by 2040, the Chinese will be effectively generating energy. He reveals that the Chinese will begin building the fusion reactor in 5 years, and that it will take another 10 years to complete. Once it is constructed, they will build the power generator and begin producing electricity around 2040 or so. That's a bold move that could potentially catapult China to the front of the green energy race. But China isn't the only one making leaps in this race. In 2020, South Korea's KSTAR fusion reactor also made considerable progress and set a record for maintaining a plasma temperature of over 100 million degrees Celsius.
Have you got just 2 minutes? 2 minutes and 50 seconds, man.
But is it impressive enough? Meanwhile,
can I just finish this? Yeah. Okay, just give me 2 minutes 50.
The UK is also gearing up to beat the Chinese.
Thanks, man.
The Cullum Center for Fusion Energy near Oxford has put its pioneering reactor, JET, through its paces. It's a 1/10 scale model of the mammoth $22 billion ITER project. Joelle Mayeux, co-leading the scientific program at JET, stated that the UK is ready for the race. Once ITER is fully operational, the dream team behind it believes this colossal device could be 10 times more efficient than the systems the world has right now.
It's amazing.
According to the BBC, experts are pretty confident in the idea, but there's a catch. Size matters. Experts agree that for fusion to work, the resources required are exceedingly high. Professor Ian Chapman from the UK Atomic Energy Authority breaks it down. He states that fusion requires resources for it to work on a big scale. He was keen that ITER would work, but it could be a long time. However, he was optimistic about the idea that when ITER works, it will see a huge amount of investment come in, especially from the big countries and investors. However, countries like the US are working towards creating an artificial sun regardless of the investment. The US Department of Energy's laser facility in California has also thrown its hat into the bucket. According to Nature.com, the department shattered its own record by giving out over 10 quadrillion watts of fusion power for 1 second. That's about 700 times the entire US electrical grid generating capacity, an impressive feat.
Damn.
Moving further, the Princeton Plasma Physics Laboratory is also putting brain power into this concept. Currently, they've come up with a computational method to simulate the collision of free electrons during fusion experiments. What does this mean? In simple terms, it means that the team has figured out how to control the electrons that are speedy and unpredictable during the fusion process. In Europe, the European Investment Bank is investing millions of euros into the Divertor Tokamak test facility, aka DTT. This is an Italian program aiming to produce some fusion energy by 2050, displaying a serious sense of commitment. Will the world ever see the rains of an artificial sun? Is China ready to handle the responsibility of sending out its artificial sun into space? Only time will tell. However, one thing is for sure. An artificial sun will be an energy revolution. Is the world on the brink of experiencing an energy revolution? Let us know in the comments below and stay tuned for more updates.
Interesting. Yeah, I think he's out the room at the moment. Sorry about my speech tonight, guys. I've got a massive freaking back toothache and I can't put pressure on my bloody teeth because every time I do, it's the main one that actually sticks up more than anything. It's actually half a tooth at the main right at the back. I don't know. It's a bloody mess. That's all I got to say about it. I'll just wait. Woody wants to call in the chat room there. He didn't sound too shabby earlier.
When the Flexner report came out with the Carnegies and the Rockefellers, they took over the medical system. They outlawed all of anything that's related to natural healing. So over the generations, people have forgotten how it is to heal naturally. They became dependent on these chemicals and these surgeries and these radiations and all these cutting people up and doing all this, you know, mysterious stuff because they didn't know how to do any of this stuff. They just started experimenting on people. And if they failed, they still got paid. You know, that's what's crazy. Like, people are still getting paid even if they fail at what they're doing. So, you know, when you look at the whole Rockefellers and the Carnegies, when they took over everything, they outlawed all of the natural ways and they started defunding anybody who did it the natural way. So if you had a natural school and you were all about the natural way, you were defunded and your school went under. And if you were a midwife, you were defunded as well. You know, so all of the knowledge was slowly lost. And then as each generation of 1910, 1920, 1930, each generation became more and more indoctrinated with using this broken system, you know, that results in all these side effects, all these health ailments, all these problems that people don't even need to experience. Because, for example, if we go out into nature right now, we collect like some chamomile and we drink some chamomile tea, all we do is heal and regenerate. I'm not poisoned. I don't have a chance of dying. I don't have all these other weird side effects that I can't even pronounce, you know, and you just start to heal.
Yeah, it's really, really weird. I actually put my headphones in because the old mate wants to call it. It might be a bit different if the volume's gone up a touch or something. Clarity. Yeah, it's like last week when I had a hit on the head. It's like it knocked my whole, I think, everything out. Like my writing. Well, my speech is different now because of my tooth. But lethargy, it was like I think an electrical shock. I want to really do some studies on concussion. That's quite seriously, like I didn't freaking kill myself, to be honest with you, without being a drama queen, where I hit, especially right at the temple there, and coming down like a sack of potatoes, you know. Just makes you wonder, you know, like I've heard a lot about electrical sort of fields and things like that in the body, where they work on pressure points through Chinese medicine and things. Hey, welcome to the room, Phil. Good to see you, mate. And, you know, through acupunctures and all that, and it seems to be where our like an electrical magnetic field through us. The teeth one does worry me probably more than anything, to be honest with you. Because it's amazing how many diseases. Nearly, there was a doctor, I forget his name. What was his name? It was over the 90% that most of your problems in your body come from your teeth. Especially, they found in the study, a lot of people that have... g'day, mate. Good to see you. Especially people that have root canal operations. They've got a very high certain things, especially where the tooth's situated, like what part of the body it affects. It's a bit like, what do you call it, with the feet. Oh, damn. I was actually nearly going to become something to do with that. It was, oh, man. How all your tendons from the feet go up through your body as well, like sensors and stuff. But the teeth are highly important to try and keep as good as possible. It seems to be more with the root. I mean, I think there's a magnetic field that can be done with the teeth. There's a certain technique I learned years ago in meditation to open your pineal gland. It's sort of like a little chirping of the teeth that they activate some sort of electrical field for meditation. reflexology, that was the one I was thinking of. Yeah, reflexology. It's got to do with, you can actually use a tennis ball and do it. It's interesting to look at where all your nerves of your feet actually go to, and the teeth are the same. A lot of people have, this report was over 90% of problems actually caused from teeth, especially, like I said, root canals. Sorry if anyone's had that. But, it's got something to do with holding the bacteria in that area. You can't completely clean it, you know. And when they cap it all or whatever they bloody do in the procedure, your teeth are holding in this bad bacteria, I guess you call it. It's really amazing how the body works like that, you know. Certain teeth can upset certain areas. So, it's definitely something to look into. You can get a graph, actually, of what part every tooth. So if you've had a root canal done, and say you've got liver problems, say, or a kidney problem, you know, you can look up on the graft what tooth affects that area. And that's an interesting thing to look at. And you might, okay, I might have to have this sucker dug out. There is a different thing about nerve endings. I think it's the main cause of the infection. But just out of your own curiosity, if you're into that sort of thing, I think it's fascinating, to be honest with you. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you already said it. Yeah, yeah, Q, that's right, reflexology. Yeah, I was right into that. In the younger days and that, yeah. I've got a book somewhere, actually, on the whole thing. I reckon it's just amazing to, yeah, just put a tennis ball under your foot and roll it around. That's a good way to do it. I've actually got a foot spa I haven't used for quite some time. I need to get back into. I was thinking of doing actually a foot spa with onion under my feet, as weird as that might sound. Because they say that onion's good for pulling toxin. So I've got like a water one you can actually use. You know, those little, just put your feet in and you can turn it on, vibrates or whatever you want it to do. It'll just go warm. And I was actually thinking about getting sliced onion, laying it on the bottom with just a very shallow water and putting my feet on that and just seeing what happens. And that'd be an interesting experiment. They say onion's good at that. They even say a cut onion in the room, if you're feeling a bit sick, is really good to absorb some sort of things out of the air. If you're into that sort of alternative stuff, which I am. I made one up the other night, actually, a candle with a lemon on top. A bit of a weird construction. Wasn't as good as I thought. It was still all right. But I reckon that's really good for bugs and health and things like that. Probably. I've got TENS machines and all sorts of crazy stuff, but I think one of my favorite is my Zen. It's called a Zen Qi machine. And what you do, you lay down on the ground and you put your ankles in it, and the thing just wobbles across backwards and forwards. But it's really good. Another thing, I haven't plugged in for a while. I've got it sitting right there, actually, to the right of me. Been meaning to do it for the last week. That's an interesting device. It apparently opens up your chakras, like your chi, cheap points and stuff. And it is quite amazing when you do it for about even a minute or 2 minutes, and then it stops because you can put a timer on it. And you can just feel this complete rush from your legs just go straight up through your body. Yeah, I need to really concentrate more on that. Trying to get healthy again. I've dipped into the realms of depression and all these other aspects, and it's not a very good, healthy place to be. It's just self-neglect, you know, when you reflect on yourself and you go, this isn't you, and it's time for a change sort of thing. Not a New Year's resolution sort of situation, but just a time for a change, you know. Let's try and get some things back on track. And I think it's really important because we're so run down with time and stress of work and all these other issues that we really do, I think, neglect ourselves. You know? I think that's a good place to be, you know. I think sometimes we feel a bit selfish to do that. But I do think it's highly important to actually pamper yourself, I guess you could call it. I don't know as a male, but as a female, and they pedicures or whatever, you know, that sort of crazy stuff. But just probably just even going and fishing and having a bit of a life, you know, that's probably a good aspect of life where you get into that rut. And it's just like, sometimes I think you got to force yourself, guys, you know. Yeah. You really got to force yourself and just say, okay, I know it seems like a big issue or whatever you want to need or need to do, but sometimes you need to take yourself out of that place or whatever, or the situation you're in, or the mind frame, you know, and you need to, excuse me, wait. I don't know why I held the phone away. I've got my headphones in. Yeah, but I think it's really important, you know. I think we do neglect that because we're in such a rush society these days. A bit of Zen time, you know, a bit of chill out and sit back and just even look at the moon, go out and look at the stars, you know, little things like that. Highly important to our overall, I guess we call it the holistic well-being of one's person. So I'm sort of looking forward to working on that. I think that'll be fan bloody tastic. Just to get back on track and yeah, there's a lot of little things for free that you can do in life, you know, grounding, you know, get your shoes off whenever you can and touch that earth or the sand. They say actually the beach is the best place to do that. As you walk along while the water comes in and out, the ebb and flow, you know, it's like there's an electrical magnetic field there. You can also, another one that I've heard that you can do is wet down your grass and do it on there, is another really strong electrical field. You just get a little hose and dampen it and sit on a chair and read a book or something, and that's supposed to be a good charger for the body as well. I often wonder what frequency these people live on under the earth, if there's that civilization that's been mentioned. Because I did hear that the earth's resonance, I think it's more from, I don't know if it's the earth, I think it's the earth, yeah, not the sun. Don't know how it works anyway, but it's a 532 hertz or something like that, the earth's frequency. Or what it resonates. And they have noticed changes in it going deeper down into the earth. So I don't know how people, well, they've got vitamin D as well, if they're living down there without a sun or something, unless they've got plasmatic particles, which I was looking at the moon tonight, actually, and I'm nearly fully convinced that the thing's a, it looks like a, how would you put it? A plasmatic, I don't know what you call with fusion, or where it just went, it's cold or in a certain state. But after a plasmatic event, it looks very similar, like the bubbling and all that all over it. It seems to be more that than actual craters. Because you think about it, like, why, if it's situated where it is and facing the earth? Well, the earth should be just riddled like that as well. You know, if they're coming through, they'd be coming through from the west, I guess, going across earth. If it rises in the east, sets in the west, so it'd be coming more from the south, I guess, of the universe for it to hit the moon the way that it has, if they were craters. So you would expect that virtually that's what the earth looks like, you know, because it'd have to hit us, because we're before it to hit that side, because it's facing us, you know. Who knows what the other side is, of course, unless it's flipped around from the other side somehow or something like that. It's retrograded, whatever you call it. But I had the theory, I think it was in the 40s or 50s, a scientist said you will never be able to land on the moon or something along those natures. I think, yeah, it must have been around the time of the rockets, actually, when they were going to do it. He was saying, because it's plasma, a plasmatic ejection that had formed. And I've seen things of plasma where they look just like a moon sort of surface when they do that. I don't know if you call it freezing or it just went solid form or whatever it was. And I'd gather a plasmatic ejection would probably have a hollow inner being of it. And that would probably explain where they sent up that rocket ship a couple of years ago. And they said that it rang. I think it was several hours or something. It rang for some time. Yeah, it's really weird. Like, just how these things could have been formed. There is a thing that I'm not sure if It was through this, it was actually through some sort of, hey, welcome to the room, Robert. It was through some higher up, sort of Freemason sort of stuff. And it showed you about the North Pole and all that, you know, the Northern Polaris or whatever, that everything goes around and all that. And he explained the moon that it was actually a plasmatic ejection. I don't know if he quite used the word, but I'm pretty sure he did. Is that there was something that happened from the bottom of the Earth for the magnetic field that actually pulsed it out. Another possibility. Some saying that ancient civilizations, apparently, I haven't read the text, I've only heard theories and stories about it, that the moon wasn't there at one stage. And then you've got other theories that the moon is actually a space craft that was brought here. Another theory is it has a thing to do with Saturn, that it's like a relay station. Saturn's the master of time, and I think it was Jupiter as well had some sort of planet where it's actually like a satellite for keeping us, I guess you could call it a matrix. So there's a lot of theories about the old moon, isn't there, really, when you think about it? Don't ask me why I'm going on this rant. I'll just do what I'm doing at the moment. But it's just fascinating to think about, you know. Could be a relay station for programming. I know that Saturn's being classed that as the timekeeper, pretty much. Speaking of Saturn, just take it off topic. I think I haven't really got too much more even to say about the moon, really. What else was there? Yeah, the distance, the eclipses, the odds on that actually lining up in distance and all that. It's, I don't know what you call it, paranormal or supernatural or just out there thinking, you know. It's like, there's something freaking going on here. I don't know what it is. I can't pinpoint it. I've heard that many theories about it. There were a few more that I've forgotten, you know. But the way it goes around, it just sort of goes on. It's a big rabbit hole. You can get stuck in. But going back to Saturn, I asked my eldest boy when he was about probably 4 or 5, maybe 6 at the most. I think it was about 5. I said, "Do you remember where you come from before here?" And he said, "Yeah, I come from Saturn, the rings." He said he lived on the rings of Saturn. And you know the fascinating thing about it, he couldn't read or anything. Yet I had a book called "The Ringmakers of Saturn." If anyone's ever heard that, that's a fascinating read. And it talks about these ships. And the ships, well, I had to question him this after he just said that, because I knew about it. It was just actually that year I was reading about it and getting right into the book and everything and studying it a bit. And I knew the size of the crafts that ran the shape that was on there, according to the book. Well, I forget who even wrote it now. You'll probably find a documentary about the ring, just ring mate, maybe YouTube. I should actually do a little documentary thing about it because I've got the book. I didn't mind doing some book reading actually with it. Anyway, getting back to the story. So I said to him, "Yeah, so where'd you come from? Blah, blah, blah." And he said, "I come from," but he didn't just say Saturn. He said he come from the rings of Saturn. So, okay. And now in this book, the rings would be probably 10 kilometers. I mean, the ships were about 10 kilometers, which is probably what, 6 point something miles. Changing over 6.4 or 5 or something, maybe 6.6 miles. So they were quite long. I mean, it's a town away, you know. So because he didn't know distance, that I said to him, I just said, oh, this is curious. All right. And I said, so I'm going to give you a couple of options. And I said, you got one, two, I think it was one, two, or three. And I said, is it from here to the gate? And like he hadn't answered me because I'm going to give him a couple of options. I said, it's from here to halfway to the town. Now, you know, I told him the town. And then I said, is it from here to the town? And he said it was here to the town. And I'm like, okay, that's a trip. That's some trippy shit. How on the earth, even out of three options, would he guess that? Let alone say he's from there. Let alone I'm reading a book kind of documentary about it, or a theory about the ringmakers of Saturn. Maybe it was someone like him. I wish I'd have asked my other children those sort of questions. Can't remember if I did, actually. And I said to him about the shape, and I knew it was cigar-shaped, the crafts. And I said, I think it was saucer, or I don't know if I said cigarette because he knew I smoked. It might have been cigar or something. I can't remember. That sausage, I think I might have even been sausage. I'm pretty sure I put to him, I can't remember fully the conversation there. Was it like a saucer pretty much, or a sausage? He said it was like, you know, sausage, you know, or a cigar. And it was just like, okay, that's enough of this, you know. Things are really trippy here. So there you go. That was from the mouth of a child that couldn't even read at the time anyway, let alone know what I was reading. And just took me back a bit. Okay. I don't think we know a lot. You know, the thing that I realized that the more you realize, you know, the more you learn, the more you realize you just don't bloody know. You know what I mean? For me to be an absolute on just about anything would be very rare. I used to be very judgmental and, you know, put down certain faiths and stuff like that. But even that alone, I just prefer not to touch those topics and respect and learn from their belief systems and stuff. And some people do need their belief to actually function in life. And I think to be self-righteous and take that away from people is a little bit selfish and too judgmental. I could be completely freaking wrong myself, you know, in what I think. Like I said, not absolute, but yeah, I've got a pretty freaking good idea, like on what I think or feel or believe or whatever, but it's, yeah, I think it's nearly a spiritual experience to go through that process when you get older and realize that the more you know, you just don't know, you know, and then when you lose that absolute sort of perspective, I think that is really a good, healthy place to be at, you know, mentally and intellect as well, because it leaves yourself open to possibilities. I think a lot of us put ourselves in the little box, in those sort of aspects. Yeah, I think that's the big problem, judgmenting others and all these things. I don't think it's very healthy, and I don't think it's very wise, actually. To be, I mean, self-conviction, yeah, of course. We can have convictions about, you know, like even if it's you're a Hindu or a Christian or a Muslim, you know, that's fair enough, you know. You've got your conviction. But I think it's really healthy, even if you're in a religion, to think maybe I'm wrong, you know, no matter what religion even it is. It's the same with the flat earth and round earth theories, you know, concave earth, you know, all these other things, size of the earth. It's not healthy to start calling people names about their different things, I guess. I mean, to one side, it sounds weird. To the other side, they're trying to make a point and have you agree. I don't know. I just think each to their own. Like, I see some high possibilities, actually. I probably sound a bit of a nutter who believes either way 100%. But I have some, I've seen some very interesting theories and equations and everything on both sides, you know. So I find it very hard to sort of come up with a bit of a different theory that might, there was a bit more out there probably, but it was like maybe the Earth's bigger than what we're told it is, which could sort of explain the sphere and the flat Earth theory. I think I mentioned a few nights ago on a show, you know, like if we're told the Earth is like a marble, and then we actually find out it's the size of a, I don't know, helium balloon, it would make sense if we had pockets in the Earth, and that's why it seems flat, because it's so, the concavement just is so diverse away that we don't see that. I mean, oops. That's what I'm saying. But I'm just not a big believer on NASA, you know what I mean? I don't believe we're thrown through the Earth, through the atmosphere. That's one thing I really, it's my gate. I just don't see that, the speed that we're told that we're going through and what have you. I just, that's one thing that does not comprehend. Everything else I can sort of look aside and go, yeah, fair enough, I can see that. But that one, nearly an absolute, pretty much. It's like, no, this ain't happening like that. That's one thing I'm pretty stern on. It's still not an absolute. But it just doesn't add up. I just can't comprehend that sort of NASA sort of things. 66.6 miles a second, I don't know, whatever they call it. That's about the only thing, really, that I've got an issue with, you know. People call it about a dome as well. I did hear that back in the day that that's why a lot of the ancients actually knew the planetary systems and could see them pretty much with their naked eye, because they... The Earth had a, with the water vapor, it made it look like it was actually like a telescope, which would make a bit of sense, how, you know, Egypt aligned with the Pleiades or Orion, yeah. And people would talk about other constellations and things. It must have been an awesome, amazing thing, because there's actually an interesting, another interesting book is, what's the name? I think it's called The Electric Universe. And they say back in ancient records, it's nothing documented here, just hearsay, that they recorded that, I don't know how or where the books are, so I have to really look into that, but that there used to be electrical discharges between the planets. It must have been, if that's true, it must have been an amazing sight to watch of the night. Like lightning bolts between the freaking planets, you know, like, and then would have magnified as well. Oh, wow. You know, when they talk about the gods and everything, you know what I mean? Like Battlestar Galactica or something, you know? Yeah, that's an interesting book. I must reread that again. Yeah, The Electric Universe. I've actually got that one as well in hard copy. Has Woody called? Have you called back in, Woody? I'm just rambling on, mate, until you come back in. He wanted to have a yarn. Well, I hope you're all right, man. Let's have a look. Van in full. Yeah, all right, he hasn't come back in. Well, I don't know what happened there. Well, I hope he's all right. He didn't sound too uplifting on the other end before. Might have started his own thing. Just sort of stuff it. We couldn't find his charger. Yeah, anyway, I need to just stop talking for a little bit. I'll just see what else I got here in my little file.
The substance I'm referring to is ibogaine.
Yeah, I'd never heard of this drug before. It's called ibogaine. I-B-O-G-A-I-N-E. I don't know if it's every country produces it or what the hell it's all about. This is interesting to listen to. Let's just put this over here a little bit. Ibogaine. Yeah, ibogaine. Have a listen to this. Let's go. Yeah.
It is. Okay. The substance I'm referring to is ibogaine. It is not a substitute narcotic. It is an addiction interrupter. It works by expressing a nerve growth factor that regenerates dopamine neurons. For that reason, it's good for both opiates, psychostimulants, alcohol, and nicotine. Before, I was struck by the fact that there are many people in the room who know about ibogaine. They've known about it for years. But everybody on that first panel didn't know about it. Ibogaine gets people off of drugs overnight. A course of ibogaine treatment lasts 6 days. It means that we can use the same bed multiple times instead of having somebody in that bed for a month or 6 months or a year.
Fascinating. Never heard of it before.
Recently, at this time, ibogaine is in the process of being banned in the UK because of the side effects of a statute that's being passed against spice or K2. In that course of that, they're banning ayahuasca, and ibogaine falls under that. That means that all the treatments for heroin that were taking place in the United Kingdom are being shut down, and they have to move to Portugal. Our problem was that back in 1967, when people didn't understand what this was, they decided that it was a bit like LSD and that they would ban that too. Therefore, it is Schedule 1 in the United States, and there's a Me Too reflex in all the other governments to ban that too. We have to bring this up and make it an issue because it will make an enormous difference. This is the closest thing. They say there is no silver bullet. Well, this is a palladium bullet. Okay, this is a platinum bullet. And it's just amazing to me that with such a deficit of treatment.
Yeah, well, Big Pharma don't want you healthy. They want to give you all these things. So that's not, I can understand why it's not pushed. Like when they were talking about colds and all this other crap, and ivermectin would work, and that's taken off the shelf. Or another one. They don't want you to be cured or healed, unfortunately. Once you realize that, I think in life, that gives you a better perspective. They want you coming back to the pharmaceutical. You know, everything's a band-aid. What is it? 25,000 or something, 200? I don't know. It was a huge number of drugs, and none of them cure nothing. They just put a band-aid on things and then give you liver damage and kidney freaking failure and all sorts of crazy stuff. It's like anti-cholesterol tablets, you know. There's been studies on that, you know, just that drug alone, you know, like, oh, your cholesterol's a bit high. Well, depends on what you're having, you know. You've got good cholesterol, you know, avocados, olive oil, eggs. Just depends on your eating lifestyle. And then within several years, you'll have Alzheimer's or dementia, you know. Because your brain's made up. Forget the percentage, around 70% of cholesterol. So if you're giving your brain anti-cholesterol, of course you're going to have these things. There was a study I heard last year about that, actually. The connection, because I was in no, it was actually going back a couple of years ago. I think I actually sent it to the office. It was a case study, but you got to watch these sort of medical issues because, you know, I couldn't turn up at a client and I'd tell them what I'd heard about it, but for their partner usually, you know, oh, he's gone downhill the last 2 years. And I said, you know, is there anything, is he being put on anti-cholesterol tablets? Yeah. Ah, okay, yeah. I just say, look, you know, can't help myself but to tell you these issues, you know. And I have had turnarounds with people that have taken people off anti-cholesterol as well, so there is a comeback place to be. Yeah. Yeah, I've actually never heard of that drug. I know I was on the anti-cigarette one, Chapnicks, I think they call it. And that sent me batshit crazy. I'm very
anti drugs. My head.
Yeah, I'm very anti. Rather have nothing at all, to be honest. Don't even like taking a Panadol or anything like that, to be honest with you. Tylenol is a really bad one, I've heard, in my studies. I can't remember offhand how to explain it. Yeah, I don't know how to actually explain it. Well, let's get off topic. This is going to be an adult's only 2 minutes. So if you've got any children, just turn it down. I'll listen to it later. I'll publish a show. This is old, I forget the duck's name. He does chop a reed every year. He's going to give you a bit of a Christmas spiel there.
Fucking chop a reed here. Look at me. I'm in a silly little red fucking hat. I'm going to read you fucking people a poem called 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. And I fucking better get stuck into it because Christy's almost here, isn't it? Righto, here we go. 'Twas the night before Christmas when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. Fucking imagine that, yeah? Squeak, fucking squeak. Mr. Cheesy, what are you getting for Christmas this year? Oh, well, it's either going to be a bloody fragrance gift set with a loofah and some soap or fucking nothing because I'm a fucking mouse. Fucking hell. What to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer with a little old driver so lively and quick I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. Well, congratulations. A stunning piece of detective work, fucking Constable Christmas. And then in a twinkling I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. Prancing? Fucking hell. Listen, Santa Claus, you better get your bloody homosexual reindeer off my fucking roof. Or I'm going to start fucking shooting. Right on. Down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot. And his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. And then Chop Chop said, "What the fuck are you doing in my living room? You fucking sooty red bastard." Alrighty. Fucking his eyes, how they twinkled. His dimples, how merry. His cheeks were like roses. His nose like a cherry. Fuck, who writes this? Santa Claus sounds like he's got a face like a fucking market garden, doesn't he? Bloody cheeks for roses and fucking noses like cherries. He's probably got a head like a fucking capsicum. Fucking hell. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf. And I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. Fuck, give him a fucking break, would you? Everyone fucking feeds him. They always leave bloody milk and fucking biscuits out. I mean, you can't keep feeding the poor bastard and then accusing him of being fat. It's a vicious fucking cycle. I mean, how ungrateful do you want to be? Why don't you just say, give me my presents, you fat fuck? Fucking hell. But I heard him exclaim, ere he drove out of sight, "Happy fucking Christmas to all, and to all a fucking good night."
Giant footprint found, 2.something meters over here. Yeah, it's another one. In Sydney, Australia. Yeah.
The bushes rained, the new currency was printed.
Right. This one's about the currency and the so-called crash we hear about a lot. It goes for only 2 minutes 22, so it's not that long. But I think it's a pretty good outlook on the situation. OFS accounts are already directed. I'm just trying to see who it's by. Alex Collier, C-O-L-L-I-E-R. That's all the information I've got here. All right. Right, have a listen to this presentation. Yeah, just David Sanders.
It was supposed to be released earlier, and that was scrubbed, and the Treasury has printed money that states the United States Treasury. There is no Federal Reserve on it whatsoever. It hasn't been issued yet because Congress has not passed the law backing the money by gold. I believe it's H.R. 520A, which is was introduced in 2018 by Trump, the Trump administration, to put assets, gold and silver, to back the new currency. Now, had they done that, you would be living in a different world today. That's why we don't see the currency yet. But this is why they're taking everything down. Now, when they take down the dollar, which is inevitable, there will be no choice but to go to the new currency. For example, what is the actual national debt of the United States of America? It's $265 trillion. Do you know what the fire sale of the entire United States is? Everything in it? $193 trillion. This is why nobody wants the dollar, because they know overseas, they know they're already moving to an asset-backed system. Switzerland's always been on one. Okay? England was on one for the longest period of time. They took it off when they joined the EU. They're no longer part of the EU. They're going back to the sterling silver standard. Okay? Russia is gold back. China's going gold back. Brazil's going gold back. India is going gold back. Vietnamese dong is going asset-backed using oil. Iraq is going to be asset-backed with gold and oil. So they're all in the process. The issue, sir, is that most people in this room have no idea what's going on because you have to look for it. The media in this country is crap. That's why we don't know. But these things are going on all over the world. In fact, Germany just announced that they're going to be joining BRICS. That's the end of the EU.
Magic moments when two hearts are kept. Magic moments, memories we've been sharing.
I'll never forget the moment we kissed the night of the hayride, the way that we hugged to try to keep warm while taking a sleigh.
Magic.
Deck the halls with boughs of holly. 'Tis the season to be jolly. Deck the halls with boughs of holly. 'Tis the season to be jolly.
Well, let's get down this. What have I got here? Well, it's a Jupiter ascending. Right. This guy plays it with glasses. Have a listen to this.
What was Iraq actually hiding? There's a theory that the U.S. stayed in Iraq for over a decade after it was liberated. Not because of oil, but something way more powerful. In the 1920s, a British explorer discovered what was rumored to be the oldest known stargate in the world, a device that's essentially able to take people across interstellar distances instantly. was located at what is known today as the Great Ziggurat. However, in the 1980s, Saddam Hussein fortified the ancient complex in an attempt to keep explorers from seeing what was hidden inside. Furthermore, strange ancient technology has been seen coming out of the Great Ziggurat, rumored to have come through the Stargate from an ancient civilization now living on the hidden planet, Nibiru. People who have come out and spoken about these strange devices and coincidentally went missing soon after, with many more people in recent times coming forward, claiming to have been involved in classified programs in Iraq where Stargate technology was used. Many people are wondering.
You never know. This is a, I'm going to play, it's 5 minutes. Yeah, I'm trying to keep things down a little bit. This is 1969, and Jimmy Carter UFO sightings, or sighting, and just a little bit of a quick documentary about it.
Jimmy Carter, U.S. President, 1977 to 1981. Reported seeing an unidentified flying object while at Leary, Georgia in 1969, while serving as governor of Georgia. Carter was asked to file a report of the sighting by the International UFO Bureau in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, which he did in September 1973. Since its writing, the report has been discussed several times by both ufologists and members of the mainstream media. One evening in 1969, 2 years before he became governor of Georgia, Carter was preparing to give a speech at a Lions Club meeting. At about 7:15 p.m. EST, one of the guests called his attention to a strange object that was visible about 30 degrees above the horizon, to the west of where he was standing. Carter described the object as being bright white and as bright as the moon. It appeared to have closed in on where he was standing, but stopped beyond a stand of pine trees some distance from him. The object then changed color, first to blue, then to red, then back to white, before appearing to recede into the distance. Carter felt that the object was self-illuminated and not solid in nature. Carter's report indicates that it was witnessed by about 10 or 12 other people, and was in view for 10 to 12 minutes before it passed out of sight. In 1973, Carter said, "There were about 20 of us standing outside of a little restaurant, I believe, a high school lunchroom, and a kind of green light appeared in the western sky. This was right after sundown. It got brighter and brighter. And then it eventually disappeared. It didn't have any solid substance to it. It was just a very peculiar looking light. None of us could understand what it was." Speaking in a 2005 interview, Carter states, "All of a sudden, one of the men looked up and said, 'Look, over in the west.' And there was a bright light in the sky. We all saw it. And then the light, it got closer and closer to us. And then it stopped, I don't know how far away, but it stopped beyond the pine trees. And all of a sudden it changed color to blue, and then it changed to red, then back to white. And we were trying to figure out what in the world it could be, and then it receded into the distance." According to an investigation carried out in 1976, some 7 years after the event, most of those present at the meeting either did not recall the event or did not recall it as being anything important. According to Fred Hart, the only guest contacted who remembered seeing the object, "It seems like there was a little, like a blue light or something, or other in the sky that night, like some kind of weather balloon they send out or something. It had been pretty far back in my mind." While puzzled by the object and its origins, Carter himself later said that while he had considered the object to be a UFO, on the grounds it was unexplained, his knowledge of physics had meant he had not believed himself to be witnessing an alien spacecraft. On January 6, 1969, the sky was clear in Leary, and the planet Venus was near its maximum brightness and in the direction described by Carter. Ufologist Robert Schaefer concluded that the object Carter witnessed was a misidentification of Venus. Ufologist Alan Hendry did calculations and agrees with the assessment of it being Venus. This could also be the Venus halo, as was discussed on the Skeptic's Guide to the Universe podcast 105 in a 2007 interview with Jimmy Carter. In the interview, Carter stated that he did not believe the object was Venus, explaining that he was an amateur astronomer and knew what Venus looked like. He also said that as a scientist, he did not believe it was an alien craft and at the time assumed it was probably a military aircraft from a nearby base. However, he said that the object did not make any sound like a helicopter would do. Carter also said that he did not believe that any extraterrestrials have visited Earth. He also stated he knows of no government cover-up of extraterrestrial visits and that the rumors that the CIA refused to give him information about UFOs are not true. In a 2016 follow-up episode of the Skeptic's Guide to the Universe podcast 561, a letter forwarded from a member of the Carter family, Carl G. Jerry Justice, was read, giving his explanation of Carter's UFO sighting.
Another rabbit hole, eh?
What's your favorite thing about Turner?
That he's my brother. Which makes me feel good to have a brother like him.
I love you.
Why?
Because it makes me laugh.
He has the best laugh in the world.
What do you think you'll be like when you're adults?
Kind and loving.
Okay, I think we've reached back to square one from the other night. McDonald's. Just an interesting little thing here. How do we have so much McDonald's restaurants scattered all over the world having enough beef to keep these restaurants flooding with beef burgers? Do you know that there's over 300,000 missing children in the United States each year? Children are being trafficked, molested, tortured, and killed to make a drug called adrenochrome. Where are all the remains of these victims? The people who run the music and film industry are the same people who run the food industry. An interview with a Jewish rabbi by the name of Finkelstein admitted to McDonald's treacherously scandal of mixing children's meat with beef to make its burgers while selling to the customers. Something to think about, there's no doubt about it. Just makes you wonder. Another rabbit hole. What have I got here? It's Max's one. Oh, that's the one that I made for Max.
Outer as well as the inner side.
Yeah. Play-Doh. I'd done that one. Play-Doh Discourse. That was Play-Doh's Atlantis, yeah.
Can't see the wood for the trees? Transparent wood, stronger than plexiglass and see-through.
We have a listen to this. This is a little bit strange. Transparent wood. Let's go back a touch. Come on, you can do it.
Can't see the wood for the trees? Transparent wood, stronger than plexiglass and see-through. Believe it or not, it's real. This innovative material, first conceptualized by German botanist Siegfried Finck in 1992 and later advanced by Lars Berglund and other researchers, offer a robust alternative to transparent plastic. Its unique properties achieved by removing or modifying the lignin in wood and filling the structure with light refractive substance make it stronger than plexiglass and glass. Transparent wood has potential applications in durable smartphone screens, energy efficient windows, and even structural elements that provide ambient lighting. Despite some challenges, the future of transparent wood in various industries looks promising due to its strength, insulation properties, and sustainability potential. Who would have thought that we would see transparent wood in our lifetime? What's going to be next? Transparent aluminum?
What a trip. Transparent wood, man.
There is a force that wants to silence you. That wants to stop you speaking up. But this is what you're supposed to do. So you're walking karma for people. You are a threat to the wicked because you are speaking up. You have been sent things, but you've been divinely protected. Those chimes, those frequencies, those sounds you've been hearing are all countering the things that have been sent your way because you are divinely protected. You are shielded from all this. The breaking glass, again, it is evening out what has been sent to you, that energy, that dark energy. You can't be stopped because this is what you are supposed to be doing. You are here to wake people up. You trigger them, you wake them, you shake them, and you make them become better. You are targeted because this is what you are here to do. Wake people up out of the matrix, the fakeness, the lies that were told to them, the programming. But you can't be stopped because this is your mission. You are here to help so many see their own potential, see what they've been living under.
That's right. I was sent here for sure. There's no doubt about it. I'm not sure what I've got here. I think a lot of it's picture. Have you ever seen? Okay. Some of these are going to get a bit
shouldn't
too last
long. Very long.
Yeah, yeah, that one.
Not ask Jesse, not ask
another
me.
Another big one, another big one. Oh.
Southeast or northwest direction, about 11.
Nah, not Black Projects. I don't really want to go down that sort of rabbit hole.
And I even had a...
don't want to go down you.
Pay attention, check this out.
Yeah, video.
The
so
Lake Neos disaster.
August 21st, 1986. 1,700 people just mysteriously dead.
All right, yeah, this is interesting. This was the Lake Neos mystery, NYOS. You have a listen to it. It only goes for, 30 seconds. It doesn't go for long at all. Yeah, fascinating.
Neos disaster.
August 21st, 1986. 1,700 people just mysteriously dead in this tiny town.
What?
All of the livestock dead.
Whoa.
All because of a nearby lake. Because this lake belches a cloud of carbon dioxide gas that suffocates everything within a 16-mile radius.
Whoa. Literally my worst fear.
That's a true horror movie. Yes. Waking up and just seeing 1,700 people in your town dead.
Yo, that's wild.
Yeah, super scary.
What a trip. No, I'm not UFO. Yeah, I've done that.
To escape the...
yeah, the guy that snuck in the area.
To escape the...
done the druids. Oh, wow. Done that one. Oh, wow. It's just getting too many longer ones now. I've gone into this folder. I think I might, what are we at? Yeah, hour and a half. That'd be a good time.
19 states have seceded.
This is, I might do this and just take it out with a song. It's a new film coming to America in the spring of 2024. And 19 states look to have seceded from the Union and looks to called, it says, the Western Forces, California and Texas, as well as Florida Alliance. They appear to be in war against the U.S. government. So this is, it's called Civil War.
Ramps up activity.
The White House issued warnings to the Western Forces as well as the Florida Alliance.
The three-term president assures the uprising will be dealt with swiftly.
Let me know if you want to try anything.
I'm just aware there's like a pretty huge civil war going on all across America.
We just try to stay out. With what we see on the news, seems like it's for the best.
Citizens of America,
the so-called Western Forces of Texas and California
have suffered a very great defeat at the hands of the United States military.
Mr. President, do you regret the use of airstrikes against American citizens?
We're moving to D.C. today.
We need to go down there.
They shoot journalists on sight in the Capitol.
Every instinct in me says this is death.
What if...
Every time I survived the war zone, I thought I was sending a warning home. Don't do this. But here we are.
There's some kind of misunderstanding here.
What?
Well, you're American, okay?
Okay. What kind of American are you? You don't know?
The Western Forces will reach the White House on July 4th.
Oh, my God.
Get in the car! Get in the car! Move, move, move!
You're gonna hang back.
I'm not hanging back.
One nation under God. Indivisible. With liberty and justice for all.
Go, 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 go!
God bless America.
This up. My freaking tooth is killing me. I need to try and get some sleep. Freaking sort this shit out. I'll publish it. Maybe I'll listen later. Where were we? We're back up in here, weren't we? Yeah, that's where we were. All right, my friends. You all have a good Festivus time and whatever you're doing. And whatever, if not. And I will catch us all in the next episode of Strange Days.